Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. On today's show, we're going to be taking a deep dive into human trafficking. I actually have two human trafficking survivors that will be joining me a little bit later in the program, attorney Carissa Phelps and activist Alicia Toppin. They're going to tell us what we need to be on the lookout for to help identify victims and, of course, how we can help them once they've been identified. We're also going to be talking about this week's primary races, where Donald Trump, of course, did have a couple victories that could absolutely hinder the next presidential election. We also have President Biden suffering from a historically low approval rating, and now 75% of Democrats believe that somebody else, anybody else, should be the party's nominee in 2024. We'll bring you the details on that. And Andrew Yang is back with his new Forward Party, where he has enlisted the help of Republicans and even some former officials from the Trump administration to push this new allegedly centrist party forward. All that and more is coming up. And don't forget, you can get the full show every single week. Go and sign up at ROFpodcast.com. And you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Before I get to my guest today, I do have to take just a couple moments to talk about poor old Alex Jones. Alex Jones, of course, as I'm sure everybody is aware by now, had a very bad week in court. After skipping the trial on Monday and then skipping, of course, half the trial on Tuesday, Alex Jones finally decided to get his butt in gear and showed up for half a day on Tuesday. But it was really on Wednesday when things absolutely went off the rails in that courtroom, because that was when plaintiff's attorney Mark Bankston revealed to a shocked Alex Jones that Jones's own lawyers had accidentally sent the plaintiff's lawyers the entire contents of Alex Jones's cell phone. So here's what happened. These lawyers for Alex Jones, who I maintain are clearly the worst lawyers in the United States, uploaded the contents of Jones's phone to a Dropbox link that was shared by both the plaintiff's lawyers and the defense lawyers. When the plaintiff's lawyers realized that this info had been uploaded by mistake, they reached out to Alex Jones's lawyers and said, "Hey, you accidentally put this material in here. Would you like to remove it, or are we allowed to see it?" 12 days passed. 12 days passed, and there was no response at all from Alex Jones's attorney. So at that point, that material became open. Jones's lawyers did not challenge it. Again, they did not respond to the information at all. So at that point, the plaintiff's lawyers were legally allowed to open it up, to look at the info. And then, of course, Bankston used that information to prove that Alex Jones lied under oath multiple times. So Alex Jones, in addition to likely having to pay through the nose for these claims that he made about the Sandy Hook families, is possibly looking at perjury charges as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if the judge in the case decided to go that route, because Jones has spent the entire week on his program trashing the judge. So, as I always say, it's never a good idea to piss off the people who control your fate, right? You are putting your life in their hands. And what does Jones do? He attacks her. He attacks her as saying she might be demonically possessed, or at least that she's acting like she was demonically possessed. That was an actual quote that Alex Jones used earlier this week. He then said, the judge and, of course, the lawyers and everybody involved in this, they're part of a cult. The cult of, as he called it, the New World Order. So he's pissed off everybody in the courtroom. He has likely perjured himself multiple times by lying about what was actually in his communications. Of course, the lawyer, as I mentioned, Bankston, pointed these out one by one on Wednesday during the trial. And then Jones's attorneys attempted to file for a mistrial. The judge said, absolutely not. They attempted to have the entirety of the contents of that cell phone put under seal. The judge said, nope, not happening. Of course, the judge did leave the door open and said, all right, I'll tell you what, though, you can, you know, each individual text message, if you want to try to get each one sealed for a particular reason, you can petition for that. But I'm not going to give you a blanket seal order here. So that's what's happening. But I will say the one thing Alex Jones, I guess, does have going for him is that he has a very solid case for legal malpractice. Now, I know that's not something most people think of. Most people don't even understand that that's an actual thing. But much like medical malpractice, if your lawyer makes a mistake, you can sue them. Like, you can actually sue your lawyers for malpractice. And in fact, where Jones lives in Texas, there's a heck of a lot of legal malpractice attorneys available. And failure to respond to a notice after you had accidentally given your evidence to the plaintiffs, I would say definitely qualifies as legal malpractice. So Alex Jones, if he does file a suit, and I imagine he will, against his own lawyers, could end up getting some of the money back that he is going to have to pay to these victims. He's not going to get a mistrial out of it, but he definitely should get all of his legal fees back because, again, in my honest opinion, these are probably the worst lawyers in America. In the past week, there have been lots of developments regarding human trafficking litigation, a topic that certainly is not covered enough in the media. It's something we have talked about here at Ring of Fire, and I am pleased today to be joined by two wonderful individuals. I have Carissa Phelps, Alicia Tappan, and we're going to talk today about some pretty serious issues, but I want to start, Carissa, you've been on America's Lawyer before that we produce here with the Ring of Fire studio. There's some big developments just in the last, 7 to 10 days here that have taken place. So kind of walk us through, though. We have Girls Do Porn pleading guilty. We have MindGeek. There's all sorts of things I want to get to, so I don't want to jump into anything before we're ready. So take us through just, again, last week, what's going on here.
So there has been a criminal trial against Girls Do Porn and the individuals who were behind that entity. There is an executive who's literally on the run on the FBI's most wanted list. And there are people who are beginning to understand the seriousness of this who've been charged criminally and are beginning to plead guilty. So last year, there was one guilty plea entered. And Ruben Andre Garcia, he pled guilty. He was sentenced recently to 20 years for his involvement. And then just last week, we had another even higher up person who was running and producing the shows plead guilty. And the important thing about that case is these were cases that no one thought could be won, right? They signed the agreement. They agreed to the video. They're in an act in the video. So these are very important cases because it shows how coercion and mind control and fraud can be used to induce acts and commercial sex acts particularly, and that we can get criminal level liability out of that. That's a huge, huge win for our civil cases as well.
And so there's been a lot of discussion that we have had, that I know you have had again on Ring of Fire, and even through the litigation. It's not just a few actors in this, okay? We're not just talking about we got a bad, corrupt company here. I've heard you describe it as an ecosystem that is essentially enabling trafficking to occur here. So what is this ecosystem that we're talking about?
And we're talking about the website. Where is this information hosted? We're talking about videos, and videos are large amounts of data and information. So where is this information being stored and hosted, right? And who is paying for that? And how much information do they know or have? We're talking about the people who design the sites, who do the filming, who provide the equipment for it, but also the people who are accepting the payments, the payment processors, the companies that are accepting those payments for the ads that are placed on some of these sites, because advertising, we know, is the revenue source for a lot of websites. And if this information gets put out there, it's not always just sold as a video. It's sold as a content that drives viewers that then the ads are sold. So this whole system in place is there for a purpose. It's there because there's money to be made. And so that being dismantled means that there's more accountability. There has to be more accountability so that there's no way to operate a business like this and be so successful that so many people are injured and hurt.
And so that's where a company like MindGeek would come into play as part of that ecosystem. They're based in Canada, and there was some developments with them in the past week or past 2 weeks, I believe. So what's going on with this group?
So with MindGeek, and unfortunately, this is not our case that we have filed at this moment, but we've made a tremendous amount of progress in terms of MindGeek in our case out of Alabama. But for the case that's in California, for Flytus that's in California, we see a survivor stepping up who has a voice, Serena Flytus, and many other survivors who are part of that group, who are holding not only the company accountable, MindGeek, that runs Pornhub and Model Hub, for non-consensual videos and for child sexual abuse material, but they're not only just holding the website company accountable, they're saying everyone who supported them is civilly liable as third parties. And this judge stepped in when Visa asked to get out of the case. Oh no, sorry, you got the wrong person, right? So Visa asked to get out of the case, and this judge steps in, Carney, and he says, you got exactly the right person. And I think that you actually intended to help MindGeek. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Intention behind an act in law, as we know, is going to open up the floodgates in terms of, you know, what Bill Ackman, the activist investor, is saying is criminal liability. He's all over the news right now talking about it, right? That we're talking about directors and executives who need to be hiring criminal attorneys at this point based on this ruling. So it's very significant.
And that is phenomenal, because we've got, you know, this whole web. It's not even just one web. We've got multiple webs really throughout the United States in various different industries. And so, Alicia, I want to bring you in here as well, because you have an organization, The Secret Place, where you help these victims, these women who have been trafficked. So tell us a little bit about what it is you do here.
Well, number one, just as Carissa mentioned, that it is an ecosystem. So when we have one victim, we have many victims. And when we have one buyer, we have many buyers. So we want to make sure that in order for these girls to be able to get the help they need to stabilize on every level. And that is a holistic approach. So at The Secret Place, we meet them right where they are. Like if we have to find them in a hotel room or at their parents' house or in a group home somewhere, we meet them and then we offer an opportunity for them to come to a safe place and just share parts of their story. And that might not be done through counseling. A lot of people think that's like the first step, but it's really not. It's getting them food. It's getting them shelter. It's getting them a driver's license, a GED. It might be doing a different variety of modalities of therapy like equine or art or music or play therapy before they're willing to really tell their story. And once they're ready to do that, then we bring in this entourage of support systems to put in place if they need a lawyer, if they need other types of doctors. You know, obstetricians and GYNs are a main player in this healing process, because when we're talking about sex, we're talking about the entire human existence.
So what we've got here, and this is, by the way, a phenomenal organization, how do you identify the victims? You know, where does this information come from?
So our referrals come through different partnerships, including the Department of Children and Families, local law enforcement, but then it's also your community and those mandated reporters that if they see something, they say something. And that means they might just suspect it. Why does this child at school have two cell phones? Where did this money all of a sudden come from? You know, and a change of status. So we have guidance counselors that are now being educated and trained. The administrative staff at hospitals or churches, even hotels, if they get taught, they can make a report. And so they just go on our website and file a referral, and then the process starts off from there.
So, okay, you mentioned, you know, the two cell phones, perhaps having more money. What are some other, you know, both of you feel free to join in here. What are some other warning signs that people need to be aware of? Because this is something, obviously, I think everybody needs to be on the lookout for these kinds of things. So what should people look for?
So the first thing is that sometimes it is so obvious, especially with when we're talking about the videos, like what we're talking about right now, that it's out there. People know it. They're talking about it. Kids are sharing it at school. People are transacting with it. They're there could be social media sites that are pushing it out and thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands, or maybe millions of views of this material is now happening. So it's not like it's hidden under a rock when it comes to the videos and the images. Those are out there. And part of what the reaction is for a victim who's been put out there is first thing they might do is ask for help. But the first person they ask, if they turn them away, or they say it's no big deal, or they don't have any access to resources to help them get that stuff taken down, then they may shut down. Then you may see the depression. Then you may see the withdrawal. Then you may see those things that are self-harm or further exploitation, maybe even of themselves, feeling like this is all I can do now. I've heard that several times of kids that were videotaped and it was shared, and now it's just like, oh, this must be who I am now. And they lose all other sense of identity. So that, to me, is the danger of this, isn't that we have to necessarily go out and try to find it with secret red flags, but just, you know, paying attention and making sure that we're all the right door. So I am very well-versed in training and going out and training communities. And sometimes when Alicia or I go out, this is the first time people have heard of this topic. And so I liken it to like CPR. If something were to happen to you right now, I would hope that someone in the studio somewhere is up to date on their CPR, right? So that they can provide life-saving services to you, life-saving immediate, you know, intervention to you, so that the EMTs could get here, so that you could be transported, right, to some hospital care. And I'm not wishing anything bad on you, but I'm using that as an example, right? That would be anyone I love in any room, I would hope there's someone there that is trained in CPR. So I see the first initial training is for everyone, for identification, to know the warning signs, and so that you could be the right person if someone comes to you with this information. And that's community protocol for response. That's what Leisha's all about. She's about driving community and connection and making sure everyone knows the initial warning signs so that we can respond and we can trust that if you know, somebody like my granddaughter or somebody we love is out there and something happens to her, or there's a risk going on, maybe a recruiter or someone's trying to groom her or access her, then we know and people can respond appropriately and call the right person who would be the EMT. You know, they're not necessarily delivering all the counseling, but that would be the person that responds, that has more training, and then gets them to some place like the secret place, which is your longer term connection and care. So I just want to kind of, it's not like we all have to go out there and search for it. We all just need to go out and educate each other.
Yeah. Okay. We're talking about things. We're talking about, you know, identifying this perhaps in a student, something like that. So I think a lot of people may have a bit of a misconception when it comes to human trafficking victim, right? We're not talking about people that are snatched off the street all the time and shoved in a brothel. You never see them again. Your family member has gone missing. That happens, obviously, mm-hmm. but that's not necessarily what all of this is. So, you know, what does it look like? I mean, I know that's an odd question, but, you know, what is this really all about? You know, what are some of the, I you know, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of.
No, we love this because you're humbling yourself to learn, right? And that's the first thing I would say, is that you have to be able to identify certain things. We know that runaway youth are one of the largest targets. We also know that the LGBTQ community is one of the most vulnerable populations for this. It doesn't mean that those youth and those on the spectrum are going to be trafficked right away. What we know is that human trafficking is actually just the exploitation of your vulnerabilities. So the more vulnerable you are to things, the more likely you're going to be trafficked. We now know that if kids run away up to 7 times, that 7th or 8th time, they're going right into the hands of a trafficker. So there's something called the adverse childhood experiences. And that's a list of like 10 things that could potentially happen to you in your lifetime before you turn 18. And that includes the obvious things like verbal, physical, sexual abuse, but also neglect, also domestic violence or incarcerated parents, death of a parent. Those things make us vulnerable to needing affection and you know, somebody to see you. So if these kids are running away from trials and tribulations at home, right, dysfunction doesn't know it's dysfunctional. So when you learn that, they think this is normal, so they tend to go towards what that normalcy looks like. But they're trying to get away from it in the sense that they're looking for food, water, shelter, love, and affection. So these kids might have branding tattoos on them. We actually had two girls go through our program who had the exact same tattoo in the exact same spot, different letters, a crown and their first initial on the forearm. That's a big deal, right? We see it on the insides of lips. We see it on the insides of hips, anywhere that they can flash it quickly and put it away. If you see dollar signs, if you see diamonds seem to be a big thing. Understanding gang code, you know, the colors are really important. So if you start to see that, plus they're like disoriented a little bit, they don't know where they are, that happens. Not necessarily that they're in like a whole new city. Sometimes that's the case, but they don't know where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be there. And then my biggest thing is when you're in like a hotel lobby or a waiting room of any sort, that person who is checking their phone, checking the watch, checking the clock on a regular basis because they're paranoid about being late and they're a young kid, where do you got to be? Mm-hmm. Right? So we just want people to know that it's a gut feeling. It's not a list of characteristics necessarily. It's like, that doesn't seem right. And I've got an odd feeling about that. So I need to make a call. And I've asked hundreds of people, all types of survivors of trauma, are you going to be upset if they got it wrong? Like, really, that was the biggest thing. They got pushback. Like, law enforcement was like, I don't know if I want to turn this in because what if I'm wrong? And I looked at my survivor friends and I was like, would you have been mad if they got it wrong? No, you know, like I might have had to lie harder, but at the same time, I would have been relieved that somebody saw me.
Right. And, you know, for law enforcement, okay, if you're wrong, you've put somebody through a little minor inconvenience and they go on with their lives. Everything's fine. You know, it's just a, hey, weird thing happened to me type story. If you're not wrong, you can save a life. You might save more than one life.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, it's almost ridiculous to even think that that would be something that, well, what if this isn't the case? No, always take that chance because the benefits clearly outweigh the risks on that. It's
absolutely.
Well, we have tip lines that can acquire tiny bits of information because obviously law enforcement, we know the legalities of that stopping somebody as an arrest. So we don't want to make people feel like they're being arrested or they're being in, you know, there's an inquisition on them. But I think whether it's law enforcement or it's, the teachers or whoever it is that's seeing these repeated patterns or signs and understanding it, they have some place to deposit that information. And then an analyst, an FBI analyst actually analyzes that if it goes through something called a fusion center. And we could have a whole show on that and bring in more people and more Belicious friends and talk about, you know, various law enforcement agencies working together on a task force. And really how that information comes in and then is shared is how you intervene and prevent the next person from being victimized, right? Because that's really our goal. It's like, let's stop this so we don't just continually see people victimized. Because we could rescue all day long people from trafficking. We could offer them services. They could escape the trafficking or the trafficker. They could just be done with it and be released at some point too and then go get services. But we're going to continue to see more and more victims exploited if we don't go to the source of what's creating this. And that's back to those ecosystems of, you know, the businesses that support the trafficking, whether it's the landlords that rent out to the massage parlors that they know are going on there, the payment companies that are accepting payment for it, online with the web servers, the addresses, the web addresses, everything that supports that business should not be in place if we know what's going on.
You know, you bring up the massage parlor issue. There's a little one not far, you know, from where I live that I know you were involved with recently. It was exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rundown little shack, really. And it had been there for years, a place where you never really saw any cars. I had driven by it for years wondering, how in the heck does that place even stay in business? What is going on here? Mm-hmm. And then turns out, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily a warning sign that people should be on the lookout for. If you've had, you know, this massage parlor in your community for a while, you never really see people there. But
yeah. I think several were recently closed down. And I asked the people who were involved in it, what happened to the women, the victims, the people that were staying there? And many people do not know that answer, which disturbs me a bit, right? This is where, you know, we had in the three that you're talking about that got shut down, one of them is Magdalene's now, that I love. They've transformed it into something that now raises money for survivors and a housing and services for survivors and graduated services. So I love that that story of that place. Now you get to drive by it and it's totally different, yeah, right? Redeemed, it's yeah. totally redeemed. And I love the women. I'm on the board of Magdalene, so I'm going to talk them up. But we could put a link somewhere, right, on the side, yeah. along with Secret Place. And the thing is that when those were shut down, we didn't have the education in place to respond to what was going on. So there is information that's public right now that says that those victims were being recruited from the Philippines and they were being lied to over Facebook ads. Okay, so they were being accessed through this network that was helped by a company that's helping them have access to these victims internationally, lying to them, presenting a legitimate job to come to the United States, giving them false documents, fraudulently bringing them in under other types of visas, and then putting them in a forcible situation now, a coercive enforceable situation, to work in these massage parlors, whether it was for massages or it was for commercial sex acts, it was under force, fraud, and coercion. Mm-hmm. And so what happened to them? That's my question right now for this community. Show me those victims, right? Like, let me know what happened to them. That is so important. It's so important for our cases because we don't have cases without victims, right? Coming forward. It's so important for the services that they need, that, you know, services in our community that we can offer. I know with the Chinese massage parlors where there are victims that are coming in from China, there's a person I know who's a survivor who runs a group, and she started seeing more and more of the city attorney tickets that were written to the women. So this is typically they'll get a ticket for prostitution and they'll get this ticket and then they'll be sent to her class. And I started to realize she had the most data and information out of mm-hmm. everybody else in the whole county, all these law enforcement, all these millions of dollars being spent. And she's running this thing on a shoestring budget. And she had the most data and information about what those women needed, about their current status, about what was happening, about how lawyers and courtrooms and judges were all being used by the traffickers to keep them in their trafficking. They were getting indebted to this lawyer that was giving them the criminal services to sign up for a free class. It is sophisticated.
Very.
And we are part of the problem. If we don't have the knowledge and we're not talking to the victims and survivors, we're part of the problem.
And I think you mentioned, you know, three, but the most recent research on how many we have in our area is over 50. So between the four counties that we take up for Circuit 1 or District 1, there's over 50 of these things just hiding in plain sight, doing exactly what Carissa said, like just perpetuating the violence.
Wow.
They're supported by these businesses.
Yeah. And this, you know, this particular area that we're talking about, everybody needs to understand, this is not a huge, you know, overly metropolis area. We've got a lot of rural areas. We do have, you know, plenty of tourist destinations as well. We're surrounded. We've got three military bases. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got a lot of people, but not necessarily, you know, built up like a major city. So these things can spread out. They can operate under the radar. The one I was just bringing up, the one that's now Magdalene's, a very small town, you know, with mm-hmm. basically one road running right through the middle of it. And that thing's sitting right there on a corner, you know, 50 feet away from a McDonald's. And nobody mm-hmm. realized it until obviously it was too late. So that to me is what is most disturbing. Again, it was basically right next to a McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So hugely, I used to work at that one, by the way, too. So I know how busy that McDonald's is. I know you've got thousands of people driving past that every day right by their front door, mm-hmm. having no idea this is happening right there in their city. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that people have to be aware of. We're not saying every massage parlor is right. doing this, but pay attention. Use your common sense. If you see a business that's been there for 15 years and you can't figure out in the world how they're still doing business, right. maybe it's time to check. We had another one, not with human trafficking, but it turns out there was a restaurant, been there for 10, 15 years. Nobody ever went there. What was a front for running drugs? So, you know, if something doesn't quite look right, it's probably not right. And that is, you know, a big thing that people just pay more attention.
And I think the question, Farron, is going to be, well, how do I know, just because it has a feeling, how do I know I'm in one of those places? And some of the telltale signs are going to be that, you know, the person that you're going to receive services from, say you're getting your nails done, but they can't look you in the eye. They all share tips. And if you ever have a question about anything, the manager always seems to come in and intervene. If it looks like they live there, meaning there's cots set up in the back or there's a perpetual amount of fast food in their dumpster, you know, it's one thing to have lunch at your business. It's another when you're eating all three meals, right? What are their hours of operation? Why are they open till 7, 8, 9, 10 at night? They're a nail salon. Most are closing around 5 or 6, right? So you start to see that the bars on windows. Why? You know, this is supposed to be a public space where you can get services. So if that feeling doesn't turn you off when you walk in, some of those other signs should indicate that there's something going on here.
Absolutely. Listen, it's been incredibly informative speaking with both of you. The work both of you have done and continue to do every single day is just, I cannot overstate the value of it. It is tremendous. So, you know, where can everybody find your website? You know, where do they go?
So, well, we have the secretplacehome.org, and as a advocacy center and CSEC, which is the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children service wraparound provider, we can help families too. So we're there for the victims themselves, but families need this help too. The parents, unfortunately, we have familial sex trafficking happening rampantly here, meaning the families are trafficking their kids to pay for their bills, their utilities, their rent, their food. So we need volunteers all the time. And what I say to people about that is don't try to reinvent the wheel. Don't be the expert in human trafficking. We've got that. What we want are people who are really good at something and they just add human trafficking to it, that anti-service providing. So if you're good at knitting, if you're good at teaching, if you're good at, you know, doing life skills, we want that support. So there's volunteers, there's opportunities to donate and give because 100% of the proceeds go right back to the survivors in our area. We're not sending this money to some other country. It's going to stay right here in Northwest Florida. And then we're on Facebook and Instagram.
Wonderful. Thank you both. Carissa Phelps, Alicia Tappan, thank you for joining us today on Ring of Fire.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, I encourage everybody go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. Because in addition to getting the full show every single week, you also get exclusive access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives. Again, go to rofpodcast and sign up. It is one of the best ways to support this program.